Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Uplifting Communities Talk Show. And I tell you, we got a really good show for you guys today. And y'all get ready to have a good time because we got a special guest for you guys today. But before I call her name, what I have to do, I have to do this, okay? I know everybody's excited, but I got to bring on the other host, Ms. Tamaya Gaines. Go ahead, Ms. Tamaya.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Mr. Brown. My name is Tamaya Gaines, and I want to welcome everybody to the Uplifting Communities Talk Show. Today is October 13th, 2020, which means we are only 21 days from the election. I want to encourage everyone to get out and vote. But rumor has it that transgenders may have a challenge when attempting to cast their ballots due to the ID requirements in place to prevent voter fraud. About 40% of the transgender population will not be allowed to vote because their IDs are not accurate. If you are a member of the transgender community, here are some things that you can do to ensure you are allowed to vote. Number one, vote early or vote by mail. Okay. Number two, know your rights. Visit the Secretary of State website in your state. For California, it's www.sos.ca.gov, and find out what the voter ID requirements are in your state. Number three, consider bringing a plus one, somebody to vouch for you and serve as a witness. And lastly, bring additional documentation to prove who you are to make sure you are allowed to vote, okay? I also want to bring it to your attention that October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, a time to establish and draw attention to this unspeakable crime that and we want to continue efforts to raise awareness and stop the violence, okay? If you think someone is a victim of domestic violence and you want to report it anonymously, you can report it by calling the domestic violence hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Again, that's 1-800-799-7233. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for that, and I'll go ahead and let you introduce our guest.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tamayo. Oh, boy, we got some that was some really good information. I really, really liked that. But look here, y'all. Get excited. Get excited now. Our special guest is Miss Ruthie Holyfield Boughton. And I'm wondering, everybody going to say, who is this? Who is this lady? But I'm not going to try to tell you who she is. I'm going to let her tell who she is herself. Ms. Boughton, tell the people a little bit about yourself, please.
A little bit about myself. Well, I'm so honored to be on this call. Thank you for having me on this radio, sir. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm just a little country girl from McLean, Mississippi, a family of 20, very small family of 20, 12 girls and 8 boys. And in the roots of Mississippi native, you know, raised on cornbread and black eyed peas. And
all right now.
Yeah, definitely. It raised me on cornbread and black eyed peas. And my dad taught us about principles about life. And so, yeah, I got everything that I've been fortunate enough to do that they will hear in the next hour is a thing that I give tribute to my parents for giving me the foundation. You know, a house without a foundation will crumble. So I thank God for the foundation that they gave me.
All right. You know, I see that you had a lot of interesting positions in your life. And what I mean by that, you're an ex-basketball player from the Women's National Basketball Association. You played for the Sacramento Monarchs. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well,
being a basketball player.
You know, I would be remiss if I told playing with the Monarchs, but the foundation of basketball for me, like I said, growing up in the South, I didn't know anything really about, you know, the world was just like my backyard in church. You know, my dad's a minister. I grew up a PK kid, preacher's kid, and it was like the church, it was school, and my backyard. That was my world. So before I knew anything about all that other stuff, that's where I call that my battleground. and to be back at home now and looking at that and showing it to my kids, like, this is where I grew up. This is the tree I used to climb. These are the fence I used to fence.
Wow. Yeah.
To me, where it all started, because my son, now he said, Mommy, where's the fence you kept out? Because I always tell about the fence story that about the jumping the fence. And so I said, was right here, son. And so, and then also they were walking out the driveway about 3 weeks ago. And I said, and I was videoing it. And I said, wow, 37 years ago, I walked out the same driveway, got on the bus, going to school. And to, you know, and just think about all the things that have happened. So, but anyway, before I share about the basketball, how I started playing basketball, it was it just being a friend of 20. And my dad was a man of principle. My dad said, if you're taking life with you just a few principles, you don't have to carry a suitcase full of rules. And those principles are our faith and our attitude and how hard we work. And so I used those principles in everything that I did. And so the foundation of my whole career playing basketball started in our backyard. And I'm going to share this story real quick. Hope I can be done with it in about 90 seconds. We used to jump fences and climb trees, okay? And I was pretty athletic. I could, you know, I could jump pretty high. You know, I had a bad jerry curl, but I was pretty active, though, you know. and so I remember, you know, and this one particular day, as I proceeded to jump this fence that I had jumped many times before, as I got to that fence, it seemed like the fence got taller. And I looked around and said, hold up, why is this fence? I know I've jumped it before, but all of a sudden, I felt like I couldn't jump it. So I said, you know, we're going to shake it off. Let me try it again. So I took some step back and proceeded to jump it to go towards it. When I got to it, it's like it got even higher. Like the more I stood there and pondered with that fence, the higher it got. And fear set in, and it's just like, oh, my goodness. It's like I started getting this anxious feeling like I know I've done this before. My cousins, my brothers, they were like, come on, don't worry about it. Cause they had left me. They was way in front of me. I said, no, I can jump this fence. And so I pondered with that fence until the street light came on, which by then we had to be inside. We had to go inside. And so I remember that night being the worst night of my life knowing I hadn't jumped that fence. The next morning, I said, I'm going to get over that fence no matter what. So I got up and went out. No one else. It was just me. It was just me and that fence. And I said, I know I could do it. Took a deep breath. And as I started to jump towards that fence, I had to put everything I had into it. And I remember leaping, jumping over that fence, and I jumped. I cleared the fence, and I landed not quite on my feet, but I landed, and I celebrated that moment. The point of the story is that I celebrated that moment, jumping over a fence. I felt like that was like winning a gold medal. I didn't know anything about the gold medal at that time. I didn't even know anything about the NCAA. I didn't know anything about the Hall of Fame. I didn't know anything about the Olympics. But and there was no cameras there. ESPN wasn't there. USA Today wasn't there. Why was that moment important to me? Why was that moment that I feel like changed my life forever? And I started seeing beyond the obstacle. I started seeing myself celebrating. I started seeing myself over that fence. And I believe being at 14 years old, 13 or 14, that's the moment I started embracing my Olympic journey. That's the moment I started embracing my World Championship journey, my Hall of Fame journey. That's the moment I became somebody that I didn't even realize I was becoming. I evolved that moment into something because I found a way. I didn't make excuses, but it was something inside of me, that inner strength inside of me was so important for me to do that. It didn't make sense. You know, in life, we're going to do something in life. We got to be a little bit on the crazy side, a little bit something that seemed weird to people. Like, are you serious? Like, why are you doing that? That's why that right there, that moment was like the turning point in my life, and that's what prepared me. That's what gave me the confidence. That's what helped me make it through the rest of my career and getting on that bus when I wasn't recruited. And even I wasn't recruited. No schools wanted me out of high school. And so, there was fear. I felt rejection. But my dad said, listen, he said, you'll never know if you don't go. You always wonder what is. And so that I remember when I said, you know what, I got over that fence. I'm going to get on this bus even though I might get there and might not even play basketball at all. And I remember getting on that bus and get on that bus going to Auburn. And then I get there, and the coach tells me that I should have probably never come. I wasn't good enough to play with my sister. And so I sat there. This coach was trying to suck my dreams out, take my dreams from me. And I just like, wow. And so he said, but they will honor the scholarship because my sister, Mayola, was there, a year older. She was at Auburn. And so I, to me, so I had a week to think about it. If I want to go to that school, they say I won't play in my senior year, but they would honor the scholarship. And at one time, I was thinking, you know what, forget it. I'm not, because why would we, you know, no one want to feel rejection. No one want to fail. And I felt like that's what the coach was trying to tell me, that you're going to fail if you come here. You are not going to play. So, you know,
well, he
how
told you that?
Yeah, he told me I wasn't going to play in my senior year. And he told me that I wasn't as good as my sister. I wouldn't make it. He said, I wouldn't even make the travel team. So as an 18-year-old, who, you know, what do you think that did to me as I'm sitting there thinking about that?
Yeah.
You know? Mm. And so.
Well, you fooled
yeah,
him
so
because
I
you're talking about gold medal and bronze medal. I see that, you know, you, your team, you know, y'all went to, you know, to Atlantic Olympic Games. You know, and you
Atlanta,
won the, you won the a bronze medal. Your team won the bronze medal in Sydney. And then you won the gold medal in Berlin.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Let me just chime in really, really quick because, again, I am super, super excited to have Ms. Bolton on the show, okay? I'm listening to what Ms. Bolton is saying, but I'm paying more attention to what she isn't saying. What I'm most interested in or what caught my attention is your opening statement when you described your family values and the fact that you were a preacher kid, right? And you described this event where you're attempting to get over this wall. But being a preacher kid, that also means that the word of God is instilled in you as well, right? And we know that all things are possible through Christ. So while you're sitting there and you're telling yourself, you know, you're going to face your fears and you can hop over that wall, it was the word of God that was instilled in you, thanks to your dad and your upbringing, which gave you the inner strength to conquer that wall. But I want to go over something here for Ms. Bolton here, because the average WNBA career.
Okay, they have some noise in the background.
It's 3.5 years.
Could you guys, one of you guys have something in the background? Is noise, and the radio station can pick up every little thing.
Okay. I don't have that. Okay. Yeah, the average WNBA career is 3.5 years. But, Ms. Bolton, you were in the WNBA for 7 years, twice the career span for the average WNBA player. I know you mentioned Auburn University, but there again, you're among the greats. Most recently, we have Cam Newton. We have Bo Jackson. We have another great, Charles Barkley, and Octavia Spencer. You are a two-time Olympic gold medalist. You scored over 2,000 career points in the fourth WNBA all-time three-pointer. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Your list of accolades is simply amazing. I know that based off of your story you just described, there's nothing that you would possibly can't do. But what is it that drives you? I want to know, what is it that drives Ruthie Bolton?
You know what drives me is my inner strength, is my faith. Like the principles I talk about, faith, attitude, and character. Because I was a little girl. I would call myself sort of insecure, sort of quiet compared to my twin brother. I did a lot with my physical. My physical wasn't my strength because I felt uncertain at times. But what drives me is there's a quietness, there's a quiet spirit within inside of me where we talk about it today, even my family, when I got over that fence, why was that important to me? It was something inside of me that, you know, God created all of us, and he designed us in a way, you know, that we have our own set of fingerprints, and he designed us the way he saw fit for us to design us. He knew that I needed to do that. I needed to endure that in order to be able to deal with the rest of the things in life. He knew that had to be a foundation in that. And even backing up, because the following year, 2 years later, I was in a car accident. My dad was driving.
Wow.
We had the church. And I was we got hit by 18-wheeler. I was thrown out of the car, and they looked for me for about 20 minutes. And when my dad found me, and I didn't have my seatbelt because back then, seatbelt wasn't a law, but it was sometimes we'd have 10 people in the car headed to church. So we'd be stacked on top of each other, so it wasn't a big thing. But I was thrown out of the car, and they found me in the ditch, and my head was laying on a Bible. And many people thought my dad had taken the Bible out of the car and placed it, but it flew out the car, and it just landed perfectly. Someone had laid it there. So I knew that God had ordered my footsteps. And I spent one night in the hospital. I was helicoptered out, but it's like God spared me. He had the protection was around me. So that's the drive. I know, and Lucas talks about to whom much is given, much is required. So he gave me life. He gave me an extension of life. I cannot take that lightly. I look back and I'm like, wow, he saw fit for me to he saw fit to have me here. So I said, I'm accountable for that. So as I embraced my, journey to get into Auburn, every moment I thought about, just like, man, he spared me in that car for a reason. My dad always said, keep a positive attitude. He said, your attitude and your mindset is so important. He said, the moment you think you fail, you fail. The moment you say, you know what, I can do this. So my dad, the whole process encouraged me. So my dad has been my strength. And so my dad has been my rock. He's been the wind beneath my wings because he had eyes that I didn't have. He had ears that I didn't have. And he was that. My dad was, he reminded me that I mattered. He reminded me that I was unique and that I was powerful in my circumstances. He reminded me that I didn't have to let my situation be my destination. And he reminded me to soar and to rise above whatever I went through. At times, he would take things so lightly. I was like, Dad, this is serious. I thought my dad should have been so mad at these coaches, how they did me. But my dad said, listen, don't worry about what people say, long as it's not true. And so he will always say, you give people your power when you let them consume the very essence of who you are. He said, when you think about this experience 10 years from now, if you decide not to go to Auburn, if this doesn't happen, you can't blame Auburn. You can't blame the coach because this is you. If that door closed, get through a window. He said, this is your window right here. He said, so don't give your power away by putting everything in people's hands. He said, you got to control what you can control. And to me, so my dad was the catalyst in my life to really help me at every junction in my life rewrite my story. Like my dad was there, and I think about it without those powerful words that he instilled in me. Like, you got this, darling. You can do this. And he was just so positive. He would say something like, if you fall and break one leg, you should be thankful. And I'm like, what? He said, because you know what? You could have broke two. So he was always.
That's right.
Yeah, seriously. Right. He said, he would always say, there's a way out. He said, if that door closed, get through a window. Do not stay in your situation because of fear. Fear would just, fear will steal the joy out of your life. So he said, press on. So what, you go to Auburn? He said, you might not make one basketball. Guess what? You won't have to wonder what if. And I think about that today because I almost didn't get on that bus. I almost believed those coaches when they told me I wasn't good enough. I almost believed them when they said that I'll never make the travel team, that I couldn't play Division I basketball, that I was totally different from my sister. My sister was the superstar that was highly sought after, and I was someone that the rejection after rejection after rejection. And so it was my father that reminded me, said, you know what, it doesn't matter what they say, just as long as it's not true. And he said, it would be true if you stayed home. Well, he said, when you got to press in, you got to lean in, and he said, you're going to be okay. He said, you all right. He said, you're going to show them. He said, not if. He said, when you show them, he said, you ain't got to worry about saying anything with your mouth, just let your actions speak. He didn't say if. He said, when you prove them wrong, he said, your actions going to speak. I remember it just as clear. It's 30 years ago. That's what he said.
Right. And well, it's a good thing. I'm so glad, Ms. Bolton, that you didn't succumb to other people's opinion of you, because we would have missed out on so much. And your life story is definitely a testament to those young women aspiring to become a professional basketball player and to be something great, and who are constantly being told no and having the door slammed in their faces. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your tenacity and determination in being here.
Yeah. I want to know, how was it, playing for the Monarchs? I mean, was it stressful or Did you encounter any what you would call prejudice, or you know, how was it? How was it?
Yeah, you know, it was an awesome experience. As you heard me say that basketball was almost slipped through my fingers, so every moment I got a chance to play, I just focused on the task at hand. I've been asked a question a lot about, have I dealt with racism? And, you know, to me, I look at, you know, obviously racism as ignorance. And so my dad, he trained us early. You know, we used to watch the movie, you know, the Roots, you know, back in the day. And we were, you know, he would say, hey, y'all go to school. And there'd be a lot of, sometimes there were a lot of fights because of the racism. And he said, go to school and get in a fight if you want to. And so, but he always said, you go there and you act, he say, you got to remember, you act civilized. Go there and get sent home. It's going to be major consequences. You think Kuta Kinte got, to be down.
Laugh because I can almost picture his facial expression, and I'm listening to some of the older ones in my family that would tell me before we leave the house or go to company's house, you know, okay, you can get in there and act up if you want to. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They use that phrase amongst all of our households in the community. That's wow.
He said, you got to understand, you can't, you know, the classmates that you see, okay, yeah, they're Caucasian, but you can't blame them for what happened in the past. He said, you treat them, you know, like you want to be treated. Don't worry about that. Racism is ignorance. Don't even worry about it. He said, we pray for them and we keep moving on. He said, because you go to that fight and get kicked out of school, and what has that helped? You get suspended. What does that help? Mm-hmm. It just made the situation worse. And so I got immune to that, and I started just like, you know what? And so that's what helped me throughout my career. One is not really – really totally being ignorant, not being naive to that stuff and not even entertaining different things. But mm-hmm. obviously being able to play professional basketball at home, because I had played overseas for 8 years. I had played overseas, sorry, for 7 years, and I played WNBA for 8 years. So to finally be at home to play basketball, and I seize every moment. It's so crazy. My teammates would laugh at me because they said I was too in love with the game because, we'll be traveling, and sometimes we're just, and I always, you know, kept a positive attitude because I remember my dad saying, be positive in every situation. If we had a five-hour layover, I would find, like, a game to play. Or I would do push-ups. I'd do sit-ups. I always made the best of the moment. And they was like, they always blame because I'm from a big family. We always created – we just created games. You know, but I just try to make the best of every situation and try – and I was just thankful. I'm like, I'm playing this game that I love. I'm getting paid to play basketball, and I almost need to play. I almost walked away from the game, and I said, the fact that I'm still here, I know this is bigger than me. And so every moment I played, every moment I enjoyed everything about it, the sometimes living out of a suitcase, traveling, it was just like, it was, to me, a 15-year vacation playing professional basketball, because it's like every moment I got a chance to play, like, this has to be crazy. This is what I get paid to do. I love it. I get the opportunity to meet so many people, and not really knowing completely my purpose initially, but as I started to learn my purpose, I actually learned my purpose after I tore my ACL and in the World Championship, and I came back to play the Monarchs. And actually, I tore my ACL playing with the Monarchs, and it was like the first season, the second season, my bad. And so it was like this is through that experience I learned who I eventually became. I told my ACL, I felt like my career was over. I'm 33 years old. This is really late in my career. I'm thinking like, man, I may never play basketball again. And then my father passed away, my role model, my mentor, my hero pretty much passed away 2 months later. So I'm really literally feeling like I'm hitting rock bottom. Like, this can't be. Like, two things that meant so much to me has gone. So that's when the Lord really showed me that everything that he did in my life, from the car accident to getting on that bus, he said, take a back, look back. I didn't bring you here. He said, I was the same God that brought you through that can take you through this. And it was tough. So I really thought about, what if I didn't have basketball? What if I, how could I, do I still have meaning in my life? And that's when he showed me that I'm an extension of my father's ministry, because he had a purpose. He had ordered my footsteps. He had a purpose for my life. He said, this ain't about a basketball. Okay, you got a nice little shot. Yeah, you've done some things, but this is not just about basketball. It's so much bigger than the game. And that's when I started to do more speaking. That's when I started to write books, because this is, you know, I would have never, like, I used to hate speaking in front of 25 people in college. I would be walking to class and be just sick on my stomach knowing I'm getting ready to do a public speaking class, because I didn't want to do it. I was terrified. And I knew now I speak in front of 1,000 people, and so I know that this is something bigger than me, that God, he set the stage for me. Basketball is just a platform for me to do just bigger and better things, and that's why I'm thankful. That's why I love the game so much, because of what it has afforded me, the opportunity, not just for me, but for people around the world.
Right. You know, mm-hmm. So right now, what are you doing right now to uplift the communities?
Well, what am I doing? I have an Aim High program I've been doing for about 10 years, working with girls, after school program, working with girls. I have a book that I wrote, The Ride of a Lifetime. I wrote this back in 2010, actually, 2011, The Ride of a Lifetime. So I still, I work with a lot of youth. And I also, of course, do basketball training. That's sort of the easy stuff. But, and then I've transitioned into doing also women empowerment workshops. And I know we may talk about this later, but I wrote a book for Pain to Power, and you know, about later, you know, by going through domestic violence that I experienced. And so I do a lot of women workshops. I've traveled overseas with U.S. Embassy doing basketball training in the daytime, and at nighttime we'll do a women workshop on domestic violence, what it's like. And so that's been, you know, a lot of things with the pandemic, a lot of things got canceled. So now what I'm doing, I'm working on programs for the schools, for the athletes, things. We have to sort of, like, you know, instead of sitting around like, okay, Lord, you know, why is this happening? It's like, hey, how can I grow in this situation? How can I grow in this? How can I impact in this time, you know, of the pandemic, and being able to do a lot of Zooms with a lot of the athletes and a lot of schools. And so that's pretty much what I'm doing now. And I'm also working on a project with my sisters, with my 11 sisters. We're doing a documentary, and also we're doing a book called I Can Because I Am, and like 12 sisters, 12 stories, 12 struggles, but 12 victories. So we're working on that project now. That should be out, you know, next October. That's our goal, next October, next the Domestic Violence Month, the next is to have the documentary come out and the book from the sisters.
Wow, that's going to be powerful. Well, I have to say this announcement right here. Okay, everyone, you are listening at Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and our special guest is Miss Ruthie Holyfield-Bolton. And we're having a really good time, but I want to inform you guys, if you guys want to ask a question or elaborate on something, please press 1, okay? And we'll let you in, okay? We'll be letting people in about the next 5 minutes or 2 minutes.
Let me add one more thing that I forgot to mention that I'm doing. I just finished a single called Dream Big, and we haven't really done the release yet, but I just mentioned, so I want everybody that listening to be on the lookout. And, you know, my family, I came from a singing family, but I'm more the background singer. I'm not really a lead singer. But this song that a good friend of mine wrote and wanted me to sing, and I really sung it really from my heart. And I don't profess to be the greatest singer, but it just talks about dreaming big, because a lot of our dreams are cut short. And people try to tell you that, you know, I feel like sometimes people have to adopt audacity, say you can't do this, you can't do that. I'm like, everyone has the right to dream, and not only dream, but dream big. And so this song just talks about dreaming big and just putting your heart and soul into something, and just say, you know what, this is, you have your own set of fingerprints. This is your, you have your own space, and you know what, dream big. Everybody has permission to dream. So that's what I hope that people get from the song, is about learning how to dream. Because you know what, the thing about it, even if you dream big on something, and even if it doesn't happen, the fact that an ability to dream, the ability to have hope, the ability to say, you know what, this is something I want, and I'm going to go after it, to me, that's a beautiful thing. And to me, that builds character, that builds strength. So this song, I'll be on the lookout for it, and it's just, I think you're going to be blessed by it.
And what's the name of the song?
The song called
what's
Dream
the name
Big.
Of the song? A Dream Big.
Dream Big.
Okay.
All right, Ms. Bolton, you mentioned something else that is extremely important, And for our listeners' podcast, we are aware that this is October is National Domestic Violence Month, and you mentioned something about domestic violence. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience and the questions I want to ask you as a person in that experience? What came first, the emotional or the physical abuse? Can you describe the warning signs? And where did you find the courage to finally exit your situation?
Wow. So the warning signs. You know what? With me and my determination, and obviously, you know, from my story, my tenacity and my fight and my drive and my resilience, that just became part of me. And so when I found myself in a marriage, you know, first boyfriend, and in a marriage where I'm not, you know, when I started to experience this, I didn't know what it was, obviously, and I felt like, you know, it wasn't something that was talked about a lot back then. And so I just say, hey, you know, marriage, I've heard marriage, you know, that song, Trouble Don't Last Always, you know, marriage is tough, marriage is hard, just hang in there, have faith, you know. So That's what I was doing, and I just felt like and I actually took a lot of responsibility on myself. Every time he would get upset and get angry and mad and would do something, I always blame myself. It must be something that I did. And I actually, at times, it's like the more unhappier I got at home, the harder it got at home, it's crazy, the more I played and the better I played outside of home. Now, my basketball game elevated, but my personal life just, you know, I don't know. I actually didn't believe it or not. This happened years ago. I just started talking about it like 4 years ago. ESPN did a documentary called Mighty Ruthie, and you can find it on SEC Storied, like S and Sam, E as in Eric, C as in Charlie. It's on the 30 for 30 that they do. And so I didn't know anything about it back then. I literally just felt like it was just part of life. Hey, you just got to deal with it. You know, and you pray, right, and you and stuff. You know, so you don't. I didn't know. So as I was going through it, I just like, Lord, you know, I don't know. It's victory stand and leaving. Like I didn't want to leave. I didn't, even though I was thinking go to counseling, and they would tell me that I got to show tough love. I might have to prepare to leave. And though I had to get two little bags and put at people's houses. And I felt like, this is crazy. Like, if I'm doing this, I'm already saying that this, I'm going to have trouble, that it's not. So I was expecting it to change every day. I was expecting it to be, this will never happen again. This is the day that we start over. This is the day that we're going to be happy for a lifetime. And I really believe that because I'm optimistic and I have faith. And I didn't realize it. As a matter of fact, when I would go to counseling, and I would be in there for 2 or 3 hours and sharing with him what's going on, I'm like, I'm going just to vent and just to share, and for you to tell me how to fix him. I'm not paying you to tell me to divorce him. Like, to me, I felt like divorcing was quitting, it was giving up, it was walking away, and I didn't know how to quit. I'm not a quitter, I'm a fighter. And so so I just endured it. And the moment, and really when I look at what I even, when I think about it, I just every day, I just, okay, it's going to be better today. It's going to be better today. And after the 96 Olympics, we got married in 1990. After the Olympics in 96, we renewed our vows, and we were headed to renew our vows. And I actually renewed my vows with a black eye. And it was a lot of physical abuse in that. And so what really made me decide to leave is that my dad, people ask, your dad knew about this was going on and he married you? And at the time I said, yes. I said, we had a family meeting and my dad said, you know, everyone has to decide it's time for them to walk away. And he just said, it was my decision. He didn't make me. And a lot of, because when I look back at it, I was nowhere near ready to give up. If my dad didn't marry me, I would have got somebody else to do it. So at a point, that person has to decide. So I wasn't ready. I was still in the mindset, I'm going to make this work. And so I fought to make it work. But my dad, he did tell me, he said, if he ever threatened you, you really got to take it seriously. And so when he threatened me face-to-face that he would, kill me if I talked back or whatever, then that's when I that was the most, that was the saddest day of my life, because I felt like at that time that it was over, and I just felt such like a failure. I felt like, man, like I couldn't make, you know, my marriage work, and I never really wanted to be, you know, so that was the hardest thing for me, you know, and I didn't understand the dynamics. I didn't understand what domestic violence was at the time, and I had to, you know, but when I finally got out, it was still hard. I got out, my body got out, but my mind was still there. I moved to California, and he was in Florida, and I was still torn, though. I got some counseling there, but I was still just, like, not quite satisfied. And so all the years I went by, and I felt like it would just go away, and I didn't realize how unhealed I was until ESPN asked me to speak at a symposium, and they had sort of heard about my situation. But I said, shoot, no problem. When I got there to speak, oh, my goodness, I could not articulate one word. It was the most painful experience, because I hadn't healed, but I just had pushed it, swept it on the rug. It's like, okay, it'll just go away. And so, because I didn't really talk about it. And so they saw the emotions, and they heard about it, and so they asked me to do a documentary. And I said, no way, I'm not going to put it. It just, people don't, you know. And I really didn't want to do it, because I didn't want people feeling sorry for me. I wasn't ready to be transparent about that part of my life. And then as I prayed about it, and I just say, you know, I will only do it if they put emphasis on forgiveness, forgiving myself, forgiving him. And so, and they say, yes. So that's when I decided to do it. And really, as I was doing the documentary, it took about 9 months to do it. I every time I shared my story, even though it was so emotionally draining, I was healing every moment. Every moment when I did the WNBA tour speaking on it, I was healing. When I did the college tour, I was healing. So the moment, all that time I was carrying it inside of me, it was just eating at me slowly, slowly eating at me, you know. But as I started to share, as painful as it was, I was starting to heal. I was not just starting to fly, and I was starting to soar. And that's why, to every woman that's listening out there, that if you or know someone, it is so important. It is so important to share and trust someone. Like, you can call that number and anonymous, and they never have to know your name. They never have to know who you are, and you share about what you're going through, because we all got to know our worth and our value. And even with gold medals, I didn't know my worth and my value. I felt like I deserved what I was going through. And so it was such a painful place to be. And so that's why I decided to do a book. That's why I decided to do the documentary, because I want women, I want to be a voice for the voices, and I want them to know that I embrace you, I wrap my arms around you, and just say, hey, we can get through this together.
Wow. And for those of you who are listening who didn't catch us at the beginning of the show, the telephone number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. Again, that number is 1-800-799-7233, or SAFE, 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. Ms. Bolton, I want to thank you for sharing that story. I can't tell you how surprised I was to learn here recently that so many of our young women are victims of domestic violence. And in their mind, they think that that's a form of love, and they allow these young men to use them in multiple ways, regardless of what they see in their home and how they were brought up. It didn't matter. They are still allowing these young men to abuse them. So thank you for sharing your story of courage and strength, and I hope it's helpful to at least one person who's listening.
I know it's a hurting thing to sit up, you know, and talk about it. And I want to thank you too for talking about that. But we got some people press one, so let's let one person in at least, okay?
Okay.
Caller, state your name and where you're calling from. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, can anybody hear me?
Yeah, state your name and where you're calling from.
Okay, I'm Joseph Manuel, calling from Lake Charles, Louisiana.
All right.
I really enjoy, is it Judy? The guest speaker is Judy? Ruthie, okay,
Ruthie,
I'm sorry.
Yes, that's okay.
Okay, I got this fence on my mind. I got to meet this fence. That's an incredible story. It kind of reminds me of myself. I guess I can say I jumped the fence, too. On the 10th of this month, it was 37 years sobriety. And,
oh, wow. Amen.
That's
awesome.
A story I like to share myself with others, you know, my experience, strength, and hope. And that's what you're doing, and you're doing a beautiful job. I would just like
to thank you
and keep getting it out there, man, because our ladies need that, and especially our young ladies today, you know.
I appreciate it, you know, and congratulations to you too on your progress and what you've made and what you're going through, and you keep up the great work.
Okay, and you too. Thanks a lot, man. It's a pleasure hearing your story. Keep it out, keep it going, keep it float. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Indeed. God bless you.
Thank you for your call.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, like I said, if anybody want to ask a question or elaborate on something, please press 1, and I'll let you in, okay? Ms. Bolton, now, I know at the last 10 minutes of the show, you and your brothers going to sing a song for us. Y'all going to close up the show out with a song. You still prepared to do that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and okay. And, you know, anything that you want to tell the audience, I mean, you know, anything exciting, anything that you see that might help them, because, you know, you've been through it. I mean, you know, oh, wow. Just amazing.
You know what, I know you mentioned about warning signs. I think anybody listening, you know, whether it's a daughter or niece or sister or you know, the warning signs are name calling, condescending statements, and really just, you know, it's a control thing. And there's a saying that hurt people. And and it's so unfortunate that they take it out on the people that are closest to, you know, to you. And I've gone to prison to speak. You know, 94% of women in prison is from domestic violence. You know, they've taken domestic violence in their own hand. And I was just flabbergasted by the numbers. And I feel that it's so important for them to know, like, hey, you know, it's like in spite of what you've done, that no one has the right to put their hands on you. And even the words, even the emotional abuse and all that, you create a norm out of bad. It gets so bad to where it's become a norm, and you just normalize chaos and you normalize toxic, and it's so unfair. And I know there's a thin line between fighting hard, but there, you know, even when you give 100%, they have to value who you are. And I know, and it's not you. And when I learned, when I look back at, you know, my husband and what happened, it was pretty much him and things that he went through, but you're not anybody punching back, you know, physically or verbally or emotionally. And so the warning signs that you really got to pay attention to them, make sure that you don't try to go through this journey by yourself. If you don't have someone close by you can trust and share it with, call that number. These people, they get almost 4,000 calls a day from people. That's what they do all the time. Like, you know, like, and they know, you know, how to direct you. And I just encourage you to just stay lifted up. I encourage you to look in the mirror every day and know your worth and your value. And like, even though when I was going through it, what saved me when I was playing basketball, it was my safe haven. I felt like I was part of something special. I was part of a group that loved me, that elevated me, that edified me. And so, and I actually, everyone that listening and going through, I want you to find 3 things that to edify yourself. Something, you know, that I'm strong, I'm mighty. I don't care. Maybe, I don't care if you knit blankets. I knit blankets. I don't care if you, you know, whatever you do great, remind yourself of your greatness. And remind yourself that there's nobody in the world got you set up being oppressed. God designed you the way he designed you. And so, edify yourself and just love yourself and know that you don't deserve it if you're going through or if you got someone going through. And one other thing, too, if you know someone going through it, and I know we want to go out and we want to just protect them, you got to focus on the survivor and not the abuser. Because the more you talk about him or her, the more they're going to try to protect them. I've been there. The more people called me and talked about how bad he was, the more I clinged to him. And the more I didn't want to talk to him, you know. But the more the people that called me, one of my sisters was really good. She would call me and she wouldn't say much. She would say, "Sis, I know you're going through a tough time. I'm just a phone call away. I love you." She did. You know, you're already feeling bad. You already feel like you've made a horrible decision. So you don't need, you know what I'm saying? So I think it's hard because you see someone going through it, you want to just reach out and grab them. I think you have to give them space and sort of make their own decision. But you have to let them know, "I love you. I'm a phone call away." And as bad as it looked, they have to be the one to realize that they know that they need to move from that spot. And so just love them with a long spoon, but always have an avenue, have access, that they have access to you to call and not, you know. And so, yeah, but you have to just, so that's why I wanted to share that.
Yeah, that is so right. And another thing, too, I just want to let the audience know, now men's go through domestic violence, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of men's go through that. They get beat down, too. They get talked about, beat down, their money taken.
Mr. Brown, are you speaking from experience? Are you speaking from experience?
Oh, me? No, I'm not speaking from experience.
I'm just checking. I'm just ready to rally up the truth.
I can't remember no woman beating on me. I can't. But I'm just saying, men go through that too. We didn't. I remember when I was younger. Me and my first wife, we used to, get into it and stuff like that. But I wouldn't even much raise my hand to a lady. No.
And I was just kidding.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah. Hey, let me let the people know that you're listening at Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and our special guest is Miss Ruthie Holyfield Bolton. And if you guys want to ask a question, whatever, press 1 and I'll let you in. Also, I want to give thanks to our sponsor and Miss Artie from Artie's Organic Honey. I really appreciate this lady. This lady here is amazing. And thank you so much, Miss Artie. And also her boyfriend. I want to tell him thanks a lot. I forget, so what was his name? God, boy, that's terrible. My brains are gone, y'all. Huh?
Mr. Brown, his name is Cedric.
Cedric, God, dog, I told y'all my brain is gone. Y'all excuse me. Okay.
You good?
I'm good. Yeah, we forget, especially when it starts getting my age bracket, we forget, But anyway, I really appreciate you guys, And we got another caller, and we got Ms. Bolton. You guys are ready to come on? Let this call in, okay?
Okay.
Yes, hello?
Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, Mr. Brown. This is Cedric from Emeryville.
Oh,
okay.
I forgot your name. You called and bawled me out, man.
Oh my God! No, don't worry about it. You were correctly, and I appreciate the host and everyone to make that slight mishap go through. But I'd like to say, Mr. Murphy, your blessing to what you have transcended into with your sports, with your being a role model for domestic violence, male and female. I have also been informed that you are a gold medalist basketball player, but you're also a gold medalist basketball singer.
Oh, me?
And Miss Ruthie. So who, where did you get a lot of your inspiration on your singing? You know, in the gospel aspect, I like Shirley Caesar. I like the Blind Boys of Mississippi, some of Sam Cooke's original things. Where did you get your inspiration to get more heart to do your gospel singing and message to your singing other than your basketball?
Well, you know, I grew up in a my dad was a minister and all my brothers sing. So I came from a singing family. My brothers, they have, you know, they have four or five CDs and videos out. They sing gospel quartets through the years. So I just always really been a background singer with them. And just as I, and then my sister and I sang in college together. And so it just, I started to, you know, like so I just sing a little bit here and there, but I just really sing, you know, I pretty much sing from my heart. I don't, you know, I'm not really the fancy, you know, out front singer, but I just try to sing with passion and just try to be authentic and as I can be. And just, you know, and just really the thing about it, you know, if you, your gifts, you know, would make room for you and put you before great men. And so I just feel like it's just a little small gift that God has given me. So I try to use it the best way I can.
Mhm. All right. Okay. Well, let's. We got 8 minutes left on the show, and I'm gonna let. We got two people want to call in.
Okay.
Okay. Let's let this person in. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Artie calling from Sacramento, California. Can you guys hear me?
Okay.
Long story short, Ruthie, thank you for being a part of the show tonight as our special guest. I'm going to keep this short because we're all waiting to hear you sing. God bless you. God bless
thank
Uplifting
you.
Community Talk Show.
Thank you, Artie.
Thank all you, right. Miss Artie.
You're
all
welcome.
Right. Okay, y'all. All right. We got 7 minutes and 30 seconds. All right. You ready, Miss Ruthie?
Yeah, we ready.
All right. Well, let's go for it.
You know, we're gonna sing a little bit. My God is faithful. You know, God has been faithful to us, and you know, as we go through our challenges in life, he does not change, and he just remains faithful. So, here with my brother James. He's a 10th of 20 kids, and he gonna say hi to you real quick.
Hey, God bless all of you all, and it's good to be on your radio show tonight. I'm excited down here from Mississippi, excited. And I hope everybody has an exciting weekend, exciting week, you know. Hey,
thank
on
you.
Well, on thanks for blessing us with your presence, Jane. We're excited to have you
thank
on the
you.
Show as well.
Thank
yes,
you.
We are.
Michelle, look up for the song, me and Ruthie. My God. You've been faithful to me, my God, my healer, salvation. You've been faithful to me. He turned my sorrow into joy. He turned my lesson into more. He turned my worst days into better days. My God is faithful to me. Yeah. My God, my healer, my deliverer. You've been faithful to me. Ain't no doubt in my mind, my God, he's my everything. You've been faithful to me. He turned my sorrow into joy. He turned my lips into Lord. He turned my worst day into better day.
My God is faithful to me. Hallelujah.
Amen.
Oh, my God, my healer. Everything I need,
you've been faithful
to me.
To me.
Ain't no doubt in my mind.
My God.
To the whole wide world,
you've been
faithful to me. He turned my sorrow into joy. He turned my
lesson
into a little bit more. He turned your worst day into better day. My God
is faithful to me.
He's been faithful. My God is faithful to me. Just want to give you a little bit of God. My God is faithful.
Whoa, man, that's powerful.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you for blessing our audience.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, God is faithful.
Whoa. Yeah. All right, well, we got 3 minutes left on the show, and I'm going to go ahead on and I'm going to pass it to powerful.
Yeah, we ready to go to church.
How do we end the show when we
all ready to go to church after that? We should have did that at the beginning, right?
Oh,
my goodness.
This was powerful. Wow.
Yeah.
My God is faithful.
I'm just thankful. My God is faithful. You know what? And I know we did that. And it's a song that I don't know if y'all know, a gentleman named Troy Sneed. It's a song that that I love. It's like a personal testimony. And I would be remiss if I didn't just share about 30 seconds of that song that means so much to me, because it's like, as I go through what I go through and my challenges, it's like allowing God access to me is so important. And so it's a song that I sing in my closet, in my prayer closet. Sing a song that goes like this. Jesus, I love you. Jesus, I love you, oh mine. And you are welcome in. You're welcome in this place. That's me, my heart. I'm lost without you. Can't do nothing without you. Oh, my. And you are welcome in. You're welcome in this place. See, in spite of myself. Jesus, I love you. A lot of times we go through things and we shut him out. But Jesus, I love you, oh mine, and you are welcome in. You're welcome in this place. I like to sing that song because it's like, as I go through what I go through and my challenges, allowing God access to my heart to mold me, to shape me, that's how I find favor with him, to just allow him in my life. So I just wanted to share a little bit of that with you because it means so much to me.
All
that
right.
That is beautiful. Beautiful,
yes,
beautiful.
Yes, it is.
If
now, Ms. Tamaya, could you please close us out? We got one minute left. We got 55 seconds.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, Uplifting Communities talk show audience, for tuning in. Today we had a wonderful and a dynamic guest, Ms. Ruthie Bolton. Talked about everything from her WNBA career to domestic violence. I want to repeat that number again, 1-800-799-7233. If you know anybody, hey, pass the number along. But we want to thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And we want you all to be safe and don't forget to vote.
Amen.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ms. Ruthie, for coming on. And good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.